Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, where we explore how to center our lives and our leadership in the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the disruptive cultural shockwaves of the 21st century,
join us as we learn to take the love of God seriously as the force that holds all of us and everything together.
Hey, Ben. Hey, Christy.
Hello.
Hey.
So, I've been sick for 5 days.
Yeah.
Sick. I can hear it.
Can you hear it?
Yeah.
Yep. This is like best. This is like the top of the cliff for me. I go downhill. I start out sounding like this, and then by the end of the day, I can't talk. And I was reflecting on getting sick, and I realized I tend to get sick after like really big events or things I have to do. And then my body's like, I'm out. My immune system like shuts down.
Put me to bed.
Yeah. And so I was wondering how, there's like three categories, I think, of people. One is like, you get sick and everybody knows it and you like talk about it all the time and you're kind of like the most miserable patient.
Posted on social media.
The second is, the second is you get sick and you just power through and nobody really knows about it because you just buck up, suck it up, and you and you take as little time off as possible. And the third is you never get sick really, and like you have an indestructible immune system. So I'm kind of the first category.
As we're talking about it on a podcast.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. I'm a verbal processor of all my big, I have big feelings, Christy. I could be an appendix in your D-Men paper.
It's okay.
I got big feelings.
We love you.
And I need to talk about them in order to like work them out. And so I'm pretty sure my family's tired of me talking about how awful I feel. But Christy, where are you in those three? Do you recognize yourself in those three categories?
Yeah. I'm like, but I'm a mixture of like one and two. Where like if I'm sick, just a cold, I just power through. But if that thing stays around or something like that, then I feel like I'm like, okay, I need someone to like pay attention to me.
Yeah, I'd pamper you a bit.
Yeah. Or like when we drove whatever 17 hours in the car and then I got COVID and we turned around and drove back, I posted that sucker.
That was the worst, Christy.
It was the worst. So it depends on what it is, I think.
Yeah.
Ben, where are you?
You know, I don't get sick a lot.
You're three?
I really don't.
Iron Man?
I don't know. I really, like, people around me, my whole family will get sick, and I typically just don't pick it up. I don't pick up the things that are going around. I've never had COVID that I know
Come
of,
on.
You know? Like, I typically just don't get stuff that goes around.
Mm-hmm. I love
but
that.
I do too. because I don't like being sick, obviously. Who doesn't? But I do, you know, I do like to, when I do get sick, though, it's interesting because I think when I do get sick, if it's mild, I do the power through thing. I'm just mm-hmm. like, this is just a stuffy nose. This is no big deal. I think I've lived with like allergies for long enough to be just like, this is mildly annoying, but I can do this. But then like when I do get legit sick, I am out. I'm miserable.
Yeah.
And everybody knows it.
You're either healthy or on death's door.
Yeah, right. Very extreme. I'm like a binary sick person. I'm a one or the other, you know?
Yeah.
So that's me.
Okay, well, take your vitamin C, Matt.
My emergency. I took it.
Emergency.
This morning. And I'm really hopeful. This is day five. I'm really hopeful that... well, see, they tested me for strep, and I had strep, and I was taking penicillin, and I wasn't feeling any better. And I called my sister yesterday, who's a doctor, an MD, and she's like, well, you probably have a secondary viral infection. Yeah. So I just kind of have to let this thing, you know, work its way through. But yeah. I got things to do, Christy.
Yeah,
I hear you.
I got stuff. I got meetings today. We have a harvest party at our church tomorrow. I have friends coming in town to play music at the harvest party, staying with me.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah, it will be fun as long as I don't give them the black, you know, give them the black death.
Yeah.
Are you going to wear a costume to this harvest party?
You know, I don't.
I feel like you're a costume person.
I would be. If I had,
I think that's spoken in faith there, Christy. I feel like you all are costume people.
You know, if I planned ahead enough, I would be. But I'm just hanging on this week. Just hanging on.
So if you were healthy, like the whole Tebby family would dress up and like match something. Like if you were to wear a costume for your whole family to be a character, what would it be right now?
The
Incredibles.
Yeah. Duh.
Remember that movie?
Of course. Because it's Sharon, Mrs. Incredible.
She is
that's
Mrs.
why.
Incredible, yeah. No, you know what? It's funny. Our co-pastor last year at this harvest party, Spencer and his wife, did you ever watch Arrested Development?
No.
Okay. There's a character, there's a mom and a son, and they go to this yearly thing called Mother Boy. It's basically a dance for old women and their grown-up sons to like dance together.
Yeah.
And Mallory and Spencer went as that old woman and that son to the harvest party. It was pretty funny.
They kind of do that every year. They're like big dress-up people. They're always taking notes about costumes. My wife really likes kind of dressing up for Halloween, but it's always an afterthought for me. And so typically I've got, you know, like enough priest shirts in the closet. Maybe I could just go as a priest. You know what I mean? But that would be
big change.
Because actually I'm a priest.
Big change.
Yeah, take Deb to like Goodwill.
Uh-huh.
And you guys take a date. Uh-huh. And you got to pick out a costume.
Pick out a costume.
And then wear it to dinner. It'd be so fun. And then wear it to harvest party.
I think I'd be happy if somebody picked out a costume for me. I'd be like, okay, I'll wear that. But I'm just no good at like thinking of funny ideas for costumes. Like some people are so funny and creative, you know, where you're like, you laugh out loud when you see their costume. I just can't think of stuff like that.
That's you.
I'm going to be my boss.
That's you.
I'm not even joking.
See, I know.
I'm
like, that's like a weird, meeting. Funny idea.
Yeah. Halloween is on a Monday this year. And I'm like, I'm dressing up to the staff party as my boss.
Oh,
that is going to be so funny.
Yeah. You're great at that kind of stuff.
Your new boss.
My new boss, yeah.
That's your new job. Okay.
She's been in India for like 2 weeks and she'll come back to me being her.
Great. Are you
disorienting?
Are you also doing your, don't you have a Halloween 5K?
What?
In your neighborhood?
Well, you know.
There's a 5K for every holiday.
For everything.
Columbus
for everything.
Day 5K.
Yeah. Turkey 5K, Christmas. We are those people. I make all my whole family dress up. I invite my neighbors. We all run a 5K, and then we come back
in
for muffins
costumes.
And coffee in our costumes.
Is it Halloween 5K? Is it really?
No, but now you're giving me an idea.
Okay. Taking notes.
There's at least two holiday 5Ks. Am I right?
Yeah. Christmas, and then St. Patrick's Day.
And St. Patty's Day. All right. Well.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a plethora of holidays on which to run.
I know. I could do more.
And your neighbors will love you.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Well, speaking of loving things, we
good. Seriously. That was good. That was a great transition.
That was a good, yes.
Well, segues. This is incredible. Folks, listeners.
Speaking of holidays.
This is the top, the cream of the crop here.
I do not, like, and I'm not saying I was nervous. I don't, like, we do these podcasts. It's super fun. Mm-hmm. And we get to, interview different people. And I was super excited about this one.
Yeah, why? We're talking about Sarah Bessie, right? A Rhythm of Prayer. Why were you excited about this one?
Yeah, because I follow her. And because you wonder sometimes, like, the person that you read their books or follow their posts or whatever, like, who are they, really?
Yeah.
And she's the real deal. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So kind, thoughtful, and, like, honest. And I that's who she is. And so it was fun to interview her.
It was fun.
It was fun. Yeah. I really enjoyed this one too, just being able to talk to people about prayer. So, I mean, we talked about her book, which is obviously like a collection of prayers by a variety of different authors, including some folks that we've had on the podcast, Lisa Sharon Harper, Marlena Graves, et cetera.
Yeah.
I like that we talked not just about the prayers or the content of the book, but we talked a lot about prayer itself and sort of the I don't know, most of us have kind of a complicated relationship with prayer. It's kind of something that evokes guilt maybe for some of us and all of that kind of thing. So I was really appreciative to hear Sarah just reflect on her experience in prayer, kind of growing up Pentecostal and expressing some appreciation for some of what that taught her and gave to her,
right,
even while sort of knowing that she needed to move beyond that tradition herself. And so anyway, I just appreciate people like that who can look back on experiences in their lives that may have been hurtful and may not have been all good, 100% good, but to look back on those things with appreciation while they also have grown beyond those things. That just, to me, is like a hallmark of maturity and someone that I can learn from, wisdom.
Yeah.
And so she shared a lot about that. That was really meaningful for me to hear in this interview.
Yep.
It's good.
All right. Yeah. Well, get ready for some Sarah.
Here she comes.
Sarah Bessie joins us today on the Gravity Leadership Podcast. She's the author of best-selling books, including Jesus Feminist, Out of Sorts, Making Peace with an Involving Faith, and Miracles and Other Reasonable Things. And the book we're chatting about today, A Rhythm of Prayer, A Collection of Meditations for Renewal. Sarah also co-founded Evolving Faith, and she is the co-host of the Evolving Faith Podcast. She lives in Canada with a gaggle of kiddos and her husband, Alberta, Canada. Sarah, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah.
Is gaggle from the bio? I love that. I love that word, a gaggle of kids.
How many is gaggle?
Yeah. Well,
how many kids?
I don't know if four counts as a gaggle or not, but four.
I've got a gaggle. Got a gaggle as well, Sarah.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Listen,
what does six mean?
That's a gaggle. That's a gaggle and a half.
That's a horde. You have a horde of children.
Don't they call like a group of crows is called like a murder of crows?
A murder of crows.
So maybe it's like a murder of children.
Oh, no.
A murder of, yes. Six is a murder of children.
Great. Speaking of murdering children, we're going to chat about...
No.
We're chatting about, Sarah, this book you've written that's gotten a lot of attention and acclaim for good reason about prayer. And it's a collection of prayers, meditations, and little maybe prose and some poetry. Maybe start us off. Where did the idea of this book come from, and why was it important for you to be a part of editing and collating this?
Well, it was, honestly, it kind of came about, I think, rather organically. I mean, I was surprised at how often people wanted to talk about prayer. I have always loved to pray. Prayer has been a huge part of not only my spiritual life, but even a lot of my writing. You know, it'll show up at the end of a lot of my books. There'll be often like a, you know, a benediction at the end. And I think in some of the spaces where I, you know, kind of find myself, that can feel surprising to some folks, because I think that there's some sort of, you know, kind of idea that, you know, if you've gone through an experience of a faith shift or maybe what now I think a word that we've all kind of beat to death is deconstruction, you know, you've gone through, you know, something like that, there's almost this sense of like, well, do you still pray? Or do you still, what is your relationship with prayer after you've maybe pulled a few threads of that out? And so it kind of arose from that, honestly. It was in conversations with folks, you know, that just would come across my path wanting to talk about prayer, why we pray, how we pray. And it kind of came across my my desk or came across my heart at the time. I think because I was right in the throes of just after losing a dear friend who had passed away. And there was almost this sense of wanting to put my hand to something. And I'd always wanted to write about prayer, but I didn't know how to do it in a way that wouldn't feel incredibly prescriptive or wouldn't feel like, well, here's a, you don't know what you think about prayer anymore, or maybe you've lost the old pathways of prayer that used to feel very familiar to you, you know, whatever else that may be. So here's a nice new tidy set of answers. Go ahead and just follow these. And that was never really my heart or kind of my posture in those conversations. But after experiencing that loss and after wanting to kind of put my hand to something and knowing I wanted to write about prayer, I had this this dawning realization that this is a thing you can do in community, that this isn't necessarily a thing that you need to do by yourself or that you are walking alone through. And so for me, it was just, I pulled together, you know, some of these incredible teachers and leaders and writers and ministers and just said, you know, with a very light hand, let's talk about prayer. Let's write about prayer. Let's even embody prayer and show what we're praying for, and not in a prescriptive, rule-following, acronym creating sort of way, but more in the sense of like, you know, possibility and embodiment and bringing your full self to prayer. And it was such a gift to me at a time of deep grief to just really spend time in the prayers of the people and to begin to kind of explore that together. And so when the book came together from that experience, it actually felt almost like its own kind of embodiment of what we were trying to communicate of just like, look, you have a prayer circle, you have people you're in this with. And that was, I think, really helpful for me. I mean, hopefully it is for other people too.
For sure.
I think for sure it is. I'm really glad you wrote the book. I think many of us have complicated relationships with prayer. We kind of get disappointed. We feel guilty. We have inadequacy. We feel fear. You refer to prayer in this book as an act of resistance, and I'm curious if you would just say more about that.
Sure. I come from like a charismatic tradition, and from with some roots in Pentecostalism. And so I'm super happy with big, hairy language. Like the more it sounds like something a sweaty tent revival preacher would say, the more I'm just like, yes, please, more of that. And so there's this sense, you know, when it comes to resistance, I think sometimes when it comes to prayer, there's this sense of apocalypse almost of a lot of the days that we're in right now. And when I say apocalypse, I don't mean it necessarily in that tent revival sort of way that maybe we conjure out in our mind from, you know, like, you know, movies or you know, history books and things like that, but more from the sense of the true meaning of like an unveiling, you know, or a revelation, right? The things that have been hidden and secret have been dragged, sometimes kicking and screaming, into the light. There is this sense of the secrets that have been kept cannot be kept any longer. And we have had this real reckoning, I feel, not just in the church, but in almost every area of public life and even in our personal lives, this sense of like apocalypse, of revelation, of things being in the light. And so that's where the aspect of resistance comes in, because I don't really know what else to call some of the things that a lot of us, I think especially, you know, a lot of our leaders and people in churches or in parachurch organizations, there's this sense of an understanding that we are at a powers and principalities moment, if that makes sense. Yeah. You know, and I don't know really what other language works when you're talking about things like, you know, racism and homophobia and Christian nationalism and these big things that are kind of grappling with in our churches in very real lived lives. Like, we're not talking about out in the world, like now, mm-hmm. like this is the thing that we're dealing with. And so that's where things like prayer come in as an act of resistance. It's, you know, it's a way of bringing all of the things that you are hoping for and longing for, the things that you love about the gospel, that you love about the story of Jesus, and bringing that together with one another to contend for hope, you know, to contend for justice, to contend for and do some of that work, you know, in your own heart and in the hearts and minds of each other through prayer. It's one more way that we have of embodying, I think, that hope. And so that's I think, a long circuitous route to an answer there, Christy.
And now a word from a sponsor. All right, let's get back into our conversation. You know, a lot of us think about prayer like in the terms like you were talking about, Christy, where it's like prayer is like this thing that I should do, or this thing that I sort of do when I feel great about God, like I pray, or, you know, that kind of thing. But you're talking about praying through whatever happens to be happening in our souls, praying through whatever happens to be happening in the world. And the book is organized for you into the three sections of orientation, disorientation, and reorientation, which I think Brueggemann uses that. I've heard Richard Rohr use that terminology. Mm-hmm. I mean, speaking of Brueggemann, I think he uses the word resistance a lot as well. And I wonder if you can maybe say a bit more about why you organize the book in that way, and what's the significance of those three words for you in terms of your life in prayer?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think that's one of the things that I was even almost a mirroring of a similar experiences that I've had, honestly, when it comes not just to prayer, but even towards a life of faith, or even your understanding of things like justice and theology and politics and neighborliness and, you know, the ways that we show up in the world. There's this sense of we almost mystify the experience of losing your answers and losing your certainty. And oftentimes when that happens, when you kind of come to that threshold or you come to that crossroad, which happens to pretty much all of us, you know, at some point or another, unless you're really, really good at self-deception, which I am. I'm almost as good at that as I am at being an award.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I know. But if it was, I would get one for that or for passive aggression. It's fine. But there's more this sense of, if I've lost these old pathways, or I feel this sense, then I guess that means I don't get to pray anymore.
Right, right.
And you can have this sense of, oh, well, because I don't necessarily even believe the same things I used to believe about God, about signs, wonders, miracles, about the intervention of God in our lives, about the care of God in our actual real walking around lives. And so for me, I felt like when that happened for me, it was profoundly disorienting. It did feel chaotic. I worried that I was losing God. I knew that I was losing community. I knew that I was losing, you know, it's a tremendous season of loss, and it's scary, right? It's a very fearful time. And it's also deeply isolating, and it is profoundly unshepherded as a season of life. And I think we see a lot of people within our churches and within our communities who feel that sense of, well, if you lose your certainty, if you lose your answers, if you lose or simply need to set them down for a time or forever, there's this sense of, well, now I'm on my own, right? And so I think that's where I really began to find, for me personally in my own life, new or ancient even, pathways of prayer, that I began to realize the Bible was way more honest about prayer than churchy people are. You know, that you get to bring your full self to prayer, that it's not just a matter of acronyms and ticking boxes and, you know, a newspaper in one hand and a, you know, journal in the other, or needing to have a particular amount of time at a quiet time in the morning, or, you know, and again, if those things are serving you, great. Like, nobody wants to take anything precious away from anyone. But more this sense of, like, gosh, you get to bring your rage and you get to bring your anger, and you get to bring your joy and your gratitude, even your silence and your longings that are just beyond words, that you get to bring, you know, your crises, and you get to bring, you know, your patience and your doubt, your questions, you know, everything about what makes you human belongs at this altar. And editing that or pretending that that's not true or that somehow that doesn't count doesn't serve anyone, right? It certainly doesn't. And so I think that's where some of that notion of like, look, you're going to have seasons of disorientation. You know, you're going to have a beginning place that you started from. You're going to have seasons in your life where you feel profoundly disoriented. And then you're going to have seasons in your life where you feel like, okay, you know what? I've got my feet under me for a little while here. I love the work I'm doing. I feel the sense of this, of the spirit in this. And even though it's different than maybe what I would have expected or what I was taught, I'm ready to reimagine that with the Holy Spirit. That there's room in prayer for all of those things. There's also a lot of room for when you don't want to pray, or you don't know how, or you don't even know what that means, that the presence of God is even in those places.
Thank you.
Well, there's so much to respond to in what you said, Sarah, and I want to hear more from you about how you learned how to pray. I was in my mid-30s before I realized that I'd never been taught to pray. I remember reading in the gospel when the disciples were like, teach us to pray, Jesus. And I remember the spirit in me being like, I've never asked somebody to teach me to pray, right? I was able to get a seminary degree without ever having to learn how to pray, which is maybe part of the problem. So maybe just share a bit on who's been your teacher in prayer? How have you learned how to pray? And then maybe in compiling the contributions of this book over the last several years, what did you learn about prayer that you didn't know before?
Oh, those are all really good questions. When it comes to who taught me how to pray, you know, my family was our first generation believers. So the part of Canada where I'm from, and the kind of cultural background of my life and childhood even, it wasn't my parents' generation or my generation who kind of were the post-Christian ones. It was like, I think my great-grandparents were the last generation who were really in church, you know, in terms of like, if you have a Christian heritage. And so the notion of like being in church and having kind of like this aspect, it just, churches were empty. Nobody went to church. It wasn't a thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when we had this radical sort of come to Jesus thing happen as part of the charismatic renewal movement in the late 70s and 80s, you know, stretching into the revivals of the early 90s, which is a whole bag of trauma we can unpack at another time, I'm sure. But there's this larger sense of it turned our life upside down, and mm-hmm. we were so sincere. And I'm so grateful for all the ways that it has felt like we kind of grew up in the faith together, because oftentimes we didn't know what we didn't know, you know? And so there was a real innocence and even a sweetness to prayer, I think, at that season of our life. Like, I have really, I mean, again, a lot of the spaces where I came up and, you know, these small, happy, clappy churches in Western Canada, there was this sense of, it was really deeply influenced by the Word of Faith movement, by the prosperity gospel, the Vineyard revivals that were happening in the late 80s and early 90s. And so a lot of the ways that I was taught to pray were really enmeshed in this culture, right? There was the word control comes to mind, but I don't necessarily know that that was everyone's intent. Right. I think that you can say that there was a really, you know, for the most part, there were a lot of people with very, you know, clear intentions, you know, in terms of the purity of their heart or their yearning. And they were hoping for that to be the case. But there was this sense of like, if this, then that, you know, if you pray this way, and if you do it this way, and if you confess this way, and if you have faith, you know, that you will get the outcomes that you want, because that's God's heart for you. And there are some gifts to that, learning that way of praying. And that was, you know, served me mostly. And then it all of a sudden didn't, right? Because like a lot of people, you find yourself as part of the company of people who have unanswered prayers. And the answer and the response oftentimes at that point is, well, God is good and God wants you to be healthy and wealthy and wise and whole and your soul and body to prosper even as your soul prospers, all that stuff. And so it's not God, so it must be you. Clearly, you've got some issues. You've got sin in the camp. You've got, you know, issues with faith. You've got, you know, like there's things going on. And so you're kind of left with your brokenness or your sickness or your hurt or your longings. And now you've got like a lot of shame, you know, kind of on top of it. And so that was very similar experience for me. I mean, you know, I was going through kind of my first major season of questioning and doubt, you know, in terms of my faith, but that was coincided with, you know, some really deep personal loss and miscarriages my husband and I were experiencing. And it was like, well, I guess I don't get to pray that way anymore. This way of certainty, this way of understanding the gospel, this way of understanding God, this weird kind of cosmic vending machine puppet thing that I kind of have built out and called prayer turns out isn't serving me super well. And so I lost prayer for a good long time. And when I relearned how to pray, a lot of it came through the words and prayers of others, which was in my tradition, something that we kind of looked down on. Right. We had kind of looked like spontaneous prayer is clearly the most holy sort of prayer, the most heartfelt sort of prayer. And so finding my way kind of through the back door of more liturgical churches and their ways of praying, I was shocked to discover that you can pray like this, that you can acknowledge things like waiting and longing, that you can acknowledge your sorrows, that you can sit in the presence of God without a whole lot of words or answers, or even take refuge and rest in the words of others. And so that's when I began to learn how to pray, you know, in other ways, right? And that's when I began to be like, oh my gosh, like there's this whole world of prayer and ways of praying that are not, they're new to me, but boy, they are not new to the church. And there are these pathways that I can walk on, and there's a lot more companions, and I'm not as lonely as maybe I thought that I was. And so that's where those sorts of things began to sort of open up and begin to say, oh, okay, you know what? It turns out that these movements have prayer at the center of them, that these things matter. And that's where things like the prayer circles of my childhood and my youth, and even that deep belief in the goodness of God has endured. Even as you add in and learn about, you know, all the different ways and methods of prayer, even the methods of silence, the paths, the ways that we embody prayer, you know, beyond words. And so, yeah, I feel like there's been a lot of different teachers over the years. And I think that some of the best teachers that I've had have oftentimes been the grandmothers and the children in my life who simply pray and get on with it. I remember writing a story about my son Joe in, I think it was in my book Miracles and Other Reasonable Things. He was really little at the time. He was probably about 6 and 7. And I remember him teaching me about prayer because he was, this is a bit longer than you probably need, guys, if you need to cut this or whatever else, you're totally fine. But, oh gosh, get this woman an editor. But more this sense of, like with Joey, when he was little, I remember him having like this Sunday school teacher who would have them do like art, or a teacher who would have them do art to explore kind of spiritual things and whatever else. And one day she called me into his classroom and she was like, well, I need to talk to you about what Joe drew for prayer. And I mean, anybody who has kids kind of knows, well, this can go like one of two ways, you know, you're sort of expecting one particular thing, maybe, you know. And so we sat down and she showed me all the pictures that the kids had kind of drawn. And they were all sorts of things that you would normally see if you talked about prayer with a bunch of 6 and 7 year olds. It was, you know, things like the pastor at the front praying, or sitting around the table at supper time with, you know, saying grace, or their mom or dad, or, you know, granny sitting beside their bed at night. You know, I remember like this one kid wrote out like a list of all the things he was hoping God would give him, like Santa, because he thought it might count. Like he was like Lego, iPad, you know. Awesome. But then she said, I wanted to show you what Joe drew. And she turned around this picture. And Joey had drawn a picture of himself, like little red t-shirt, sticky up, you know, little hair. And he was sitting on our back deck. And beside him was, he had drawn a picture of Jesus. And you know it's Jesus because he got the blue sash, right? And I was just
right, yeah. Wow.
Super happy that it wasn't like blonde, blue-eyed Jesus. So that was good. But
good job, Mom.
And
good
so
job.
He had, yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. We'll take any win we get. But there was this sense of like the two of them sitting on our back deck, you know, sun in the corner, fluffy clouds, the whole thing. And he had drawn these little like cartoon bubbles, like, you know, when people are speaking to each other in a comic book. And he had written, I love you, Jesus. And then Jesus saying, I love you, Joseph. And at the bottom, he had written, this is Joe and my Jesus. This is how we pray. Wow. And I remember, like, I took it home. I still have it up in my keepsake box. But it that moment even came at another pivotal point for prayer for me of being like, oh, you also can just sit with Jesus. You can also just sit with Jesus and just allow yourself to be loved and let yourself be loved. And that that maybe is the conversation we're really having all the time anyway. And so even in moments like that, I feel like, you know, grandmothers, children, you know, there's just a million ways to learn how to pray and so many ways to be taught. But I that's one that has stayed with me for a lot of years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so sweet.
We're not going to cut that out.
No, no, not happening.
We never cut anything out.
It is ironic. It is ironic. The small ecstatic prayer you prayed in the middle about getting an editor. You were the editor for this book, Sarah, of prayers. I guess I didn't know how badly I needed women and women of color to teach me how to pray until I read this book. Can you reflect on that decision? It was assuming conscious decision to include female voices in this book exclusively. And what work do you see that doing?
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that, Matt. Thank you. I didn't necessarily start out with that as being the primary focus. It was something that almost emerged rather organically, you know, through relationship and through even my own teachers at that time and now, you know, in terms of like who are the people at whose feet I just want to sit. And I want to hear what they would say about prayer. I want to eavesdrop even on their prayers. I want to borrow some language from them. I want to be emboldened by their courage and their bravery and their truth telling. It emerged and then it became one of the things that I was most proud of and I found incredibly powerful. I think especially because in a lot of our churches, people oftentimes don't get a glimpse into the prayers of women. They can often be, you know, separated or set aside. I mean, I have preached in churches where they have said, please don't pray at the end of this because we don't allow women to pray, you know, in church. I usually did anyway, because it turns out I have an 8-wing and the Enneagram. That went well.
Lord, I want to pray right now for the man who never told me I shouldn't pray.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, my goodness. It was just like, never got invited back. I don't know why, but sorry. There was more this sense of, I don't know, even the gift of it. I felt really privileged to receive. I mean, I remember a number of them coming across my desk and being like, this will be disruptive for some folks. Some of these things will be disruptive for people to read or to hear or to understand that you get to pray this way, that the very place you should be taking your anger, the very place you should be taking your grief, the very place you should be taking your sorrow is to prayer. And these women are graciously embodying that and showing that. And that kind of honesty isn't usually in like the lady section of the bookstore, right? And so, yeah. I mean, it ends up being this really powerful embodiment and gift, you know, right along the way itself, right? And so, yeah, I'm incredibly happy about that. I really love how it came together. And I am incredibly grateful because all of these women did. They just, I mean, in so many cases, they just opened up a vein and just let out everything that we needed to see or that was really even the cry of our own heart. Like I'm thinking of the cry in the heart that I've heard from a number of folks over the years, I see like reflected in Lisa Sharon Harper's Prayer for America. like just her lament, right? And her longing and even her grief and her despair over that. Just having that written down in a book of prayer doesn't happen a whole lot anymore, right? You know, even the prayers for when you don't know what you want to pray, or I'm thinking of like Micah Boyette's prayer against deficiency, right? That being held in the slow hand of God. I mean, these are things that are not the name it and claim it sort of ways that I was, you know, initially introduced to prayer. And yet they are exactly what my soul was longing for. And I think a lot of us are at this moment in time. We can't be in the midst of a collective apocalypse without needing to kind of sit with some of these big things and recognize those things belong in prayer as well. Mm-hmm. And these are good leaders and good guides for that space if you're not even there yet yourself.
We'll be right back.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Let's get back to the show.
It's so important for us to be authentic and real and honest. And I was not taught that in prayer growing up. And it's been the women in my life specifically, no offense against men, but it's been the women in my life who have modeled that in a really powerful way. And I think your book does that. But it reminds me, I have a group of friends that we call ourselves the spiritual spa sisters because honestly, being with them is like good for the soul type mentality. And one of them was going through a very difficult thing. And without going into detail, she was super angry. And another one of them was like, well, let's get together and let you be angry and tell God that you're angry. And in my heart, I'm telling you, I was like, I don't know if this is a good idea, right? People. Like, you know.
So true.
And we went and got plates and we brought them in her living room in her rubbish bin. And she smashed plates in the middle of her living room for like 30 minutes. And we all sobbed in the grief and the pain of what she was going through. And I'm telling you, it was one of the most powerful prayer moments of my life, because there was real like honesty and it was authentic and it wasn't churchy words and it wasn't like, let me get this right. It was, here's my whole heart, God.
Yeah.
And I think the prayers in your book are similar to that. It's just raw. And I think we need that. And with the permission to pray that way and to be taught to pray that way is really beautiful.
That's beautiful, Christy. What a beautiful thing to do even within community and with one another, and to bless that. Yeah. I think that's part of, you know, some of the stuff that we hope for is that we're not in it alone, right? Mm-hmm. That you can bear that sort of witness with one another, that you can be even in covenant together in those moments. Mm-hmm. Like there's no part of you that doesn't belong there. And so, God, what a gift. That's beautiful.
Yeah. We're almost out of time, but I do want to double click on this idea of, you know, being able to pray kind of what's in our hearts. And Matt, you mentioned, you know, this book is written by women and women of color. one of the prayers, at least one of them, several of them that have gotten some attention, I'm sure you're aware. But one of them is a prayer from a prayer of a weary black woman. And it starts out kind of like as an I'm drawing attention to this because it's very similar to an imprecatory psalm, right? These are, I don't know how, what the percentage is of the psalms, but like we're surprised to see these things. And then, you know, Christy, you could talk about being in solidarity with your friend who was angry and upset. But oftentimes, I think what I've seen on social media and other places is that when black women, especially black women, can like voice their lament, voice their imprecatory desires, right? In prayer, that oftentimes the backlash is quite intense, mostly from white people, mostly from white men. And so I just wonder if you could share, maybe from your perspective, why it's important to include voices like this, and maybe how, maybe specifically for white men, I'm asking you to help me, maybe Sarah, like how can white people and white men especially enter into or stand in solidarity with or pray even with, you know, this prayer of a weary black woman, for example? Like how do we engage with this in ways that are not harmful? Like a lot of the more extreme responses to this have been, you know, just they called it racist and, you know, like it was really ridiculous. But how do we, when we initially feel, you know, the weight of those words, I think it's natural. I mean, I feel like, oh gosh, like yikes, you know, I don't know. Give us some clues into like how to respond to that kind of thing and why it's important to include those voices.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely did have, you know, kind of a big viral backlash organized against the book and particularly against Dr. Shaniqua Walker Barnes, for her prayer. Yeah. And it was, you know, a scary time, right? I mean, people, you know, it was a scary time for her in particular. And you know, it took a tremendous amount of courage. And she has written since then about why she wrote the prayer she wrote. I can send you the links if you want to share them with your folks, if they want to read a little bit more about it along the way.
That would be great. Yeah, we'll put those in the show notes.
Yeah, no, if it's helpful, then that's great. But I think that there was this sense of, in so many ways, that sort of faithful and honest lament, which is, as you said, very modeled on scripture, was in itself just this huge gift of intimacy and vulnerability, I think, to the church, right? And so that backlash that she faced, and that the book faced, I think, was almost like proof of why it was so necessary.
Yes,
and why exactly. Something that was so prophetic and powerful and potent was necessary. And I think because, again, you know, like our Dr. Walker Barnes, incredible leader, incredible writer, just such a beautiful presence, such a beautiful spirit. And when she brings that full weariness and anger over the very real sins of racism to God, right? That she is bringing that to God. She's bringing her rage and her anger, even her exhaustion, her suffering, even her hopes to get out of or be given a pass on loving our neighbors when they are oppressing and marginalizing her as a black woman. And yet even in that prayer, we're witnessing her kind of turn towards everything that she knows to be true about God's call to justice and love, that she is turning towards trust. She is embodying a turn in the prayer towards hope and love, even when she is wounded and heartbroken. And so she's praising God, you know, for things like protection and for the ancestors and for, you know, being able to be part of this ministry of justice and reconciliation. You know, and she even like really explicitly names the community that is surrounding her, that great cloud of witnesses, to compel her forwards as she is like leaning into this biblical call to love our neighbors, even when it's painful in real time. And so to me, the backlash was like, okay, you took a sentence out of context and missed the whole ministry and sermon of what the whole thing is, right? And so to me, I think that's the invitation for a lot of people. If it stirs up discomfort in you, if it stirs up, you know, a feeling of wanting to attack or outrage or wanting to, or even feeling, you know, some heat or some pain around that, I think that in itself often is an invitation from the Holy Spirit. That we need to pay attention to our discomfort. And if there is something that is stirred up from reading the honest lament of a Black woman over the sin of racism and her longing for Jesus to meet her in that pain, even as she's calling on her community and calling on the ministry of reconciliation and justice, calling on Jesus's call to love, that's a call you can echo. That's a call, that's a prayer you can jump in on. That's a prayer that you can borrow language from, even if what you're grappling with is the discomfort or the call out or the, ooh, this didn't feel great. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Lean into that in prayer, right? And I think that even in that particular prayer, you receive language for it. And so, yeah, I mean, it was a beautiful, I think, missed opportunity for a lot of folks to pray. Yeah. And I think she even said in the prayer, she was like, you're to pray and press on in love. Yeah. And I think that's our invitation, even if you're feeling discomfort over it.
That's really well said, Sarah. I deeply appreciate that. I think What it made me realize is that I think like praying the imprecatory Psalms is new for me. They used to make me uncomfortable. I'm just like, oh gosh, like I don't, you know, like, man, I don't hate anybody that much. My goodness, you know?
And you so love learning, babies. You don't want to smash their heads on rocks, you know, right?
They're all so cute.
They're cute very babies. Aggressive.
You know? Yeah. So, but learning to pray those imprecatory Psalms is new. And as a white man who's sort of on the top of the heap as far as power goes, you know, in our current cultural environment, like there has been, it has been an act of solidarity to learn to feel the anger of those who've been on the other side of that power. And I think that's just another invitation for me. I'm just realizing, like, I never think of myself in the imprecatory Psalms as the one who's being prayed against. But maybe I do represent that for some people, and that's actually okay for me. That's actually a good thing for me to reckon with, that I represent like the object of an imprecatory psalm for a lot of people. And so part of my corporate repentance, again, you know, this on a big picture level, part of my corporate repentance is to embrace that voice, you know, of anger, and to embrace that voice of lament and pain. As my own, you know, to say like, as far as possible for me, I'm going to step into solidarity with this pain that I don't have to feel because I'm not, you know what I mean? Like I can opt out of it if I want. And so anyway, I appreciate you sharing all that. And I think it's a new way for me to pray and I'm learning.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're helping. Thanks.
The book again is called A Rhythm of Prayer, A Collection of Meditations for Renewal. It's a book to savor and to dwell in, not to finish or finish and put away. This is a book that you'll want to come back to over and over. Sarah, if people are intrigued, I assume a lot of our listeners are familiar with your work, but would you let us know kind of where they can find you on the World Wide Web? Where do you hang out?
Yeah, sure. If you just head over to sarahbessie.com, you'll find links for everything, books and newsletter that I write, as well as Evolving Faith, which is, you know, an online community and a gathering and all the things, you know, for folks who are maybe finding themselves in that wilderness season. And I'm just Sarah Bessie kind of in all the places on social media, all the usual, not on Snapchat. I'm just too old for that crap, but and TikTok.
I hear you.
I'm Gen X. I'm at capacity. Right. I've got no more.
I resonate with that.
Yeah, totally. Ben's still on MySpace. He doesn't get...
I don't even get Twitter.
Twitter. So,
bless it.
Sarah, all joking aside, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Christy, you got teenagers, right?
I sure do.
Is it one or two?
I got two. I'm about to be three.
Oh my goodness. And your oldest is a boy, and then your second is a girl.
Girl.
And then the third is
girl.
Will be a girl. So you're about ready to have two teenage girls.
Yes.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. All right. Well, let me help you out. Do you know why teenage girls only walk in groups of 3, 5, and 7?
No.
Because they literally can't even.
That's a good one. I'm going to repeat that one.
Yeah. I told my 10-year-old girl that joke, and she didn't even roll her eyes at me.
No,
she just
come
looked
on.
At me and then, like, slid her eyes away. Like,
it's not even worth,
wasn't even
a
worth
full
going
roll.
Up.
Look, it's a rough roll. It is a rough crowd in this house. If I get a laugh out of either my wife or my daughter, like, yeah. I know I'm ready for Saturday Night Live. It's just like, that's how rough this crowd is here.
Yeah. I feel like that's good for you, though, Matt. It's good for you. I'm happy for you about that.
You know, secretly, I relish being underappreciated.
How would I know who I am if people didn't appreciate me? Oh, man. Enneagram 4 stuff.
I'm just vibing, you know? Mm-hmm. Just vibing. All right, everybody.
That's what I mean. That's why it's good for you.
Until next time.
Until next time, see you next week, everybody.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you're finding it helpful or enjoyable, we'd love it if you'd tell your friends about it.
Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And you can join our Gravity community online for free at gravityleadership.com/join.
You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as our email most Fridays with curated links to articles we find interesting and helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Our podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the show. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com.
We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravityleadership.com/message and click the Start Recording button.
You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.